bags of cream, red roses too.
This is Ed Cohen, your editor of Global Business News,
coming to you today from San Diego, California.
And Vancouver, British Columbia, the western side of Canada. Our special guest today is Andrew Woods, MBA and CTP. He's a professional speaker, trainer, and also author of BOOM, B-O-O-M, Engaging and Inspiring Employees Across Cultures with a Focus on Asia and China. Andrew is writing a new book called Behind the Great Wall of China, which is a little bit different. It's about daily life through a Westerner's eyes, but not the expat experience. It's the real thing here. And let's say hello to author Andrew Wood.
How you doing, Ed?
Just great. Thanks for being our guest on Global Radio Talk Show.
My pleasure.
You're an expert at Asian culture. You've lived in the region. You've run a business in the region. You've written a book about engaging the Asians from a business point of view. And now you're in the process of writing another book about lessons learned. But I want to just start with, what is Guangxi?
Okay, well, Guangxi is, I guess the best way to put it, Ed, would be, we have in the UK, for example, the old boys club, the scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. It's basically a sophisticated system of how people do favors for each other to sort of move up the ladder in business and personal life. Example is, I'll do a favor for someone and I might get more business favor if I know someone who knows someone in someone's Guangxi network. So it's very similar to what we have in the Western world, but it's much more advanced and much more sophisticated in its structure.
So you pronounce it as Guangxi?
Yes, Guangxi.
Okay, so Xi is pronounced with SH almost.
It is, yes, it is.
Okay, so Guangxi is networking. Who you know and who can help you. And is that expected or is it something that has to be earned?
It's something that is, depending on what family you were born into, what your relations are with your classmates, which is very, your schoolmates is very high up on in sort of the network. It can be earned. And I think it also is important to point out that it was very important in Chinese society. And I think as you know, the world becomes smaller, as more and more Chinese people get involved with westernized business deals, it's a little bit less important as it once was, but it still is very strong in that culture.
So a guy coming from California or from Vancouver who's not imbued with the culture to the extent that you have been, how do you do that? I mean, is there a how-to?
There's a how-to, and it's a how-to based on trial and error. I mean, I would say I've heard of people coming over and meeting the correct people, and businesses move very quickly. But I think it's much different from business in North America, which is done kind of, you know, on a handshake. You move straight into business in North America, whereas in China, it's all about building trust with the individual first. There's a lot of banqueting and dining and going out together before you actually get to the stage. In fact, one of the common frustrations when I was living in China, when Americans or Westerners in general would come over and speak with me, is that they would say, why can't people get to business right away? And, you can't change the culture. The culture is based on this is the way they do business. So if you've got 5 days in China on a business trip, well, most people would be frustrated because they know they have to come back a few times to get to the stage where they make a deal, because it's all about the personal relationship first.
I understand you lived in China for about 10 years.
Yeah, on the ground for about 7, but doing business with China for well over 10 years, yes.
Okay, and you ran a business in China or in Hong Kong?
Both in Hong Kong and China. I had a joint venture with my MBA classmates in based out of Shanghai, China, and then ran my own company based out of Hong Kong.
So how long ago was that? There must have been some changes since you did that. But, you know, tell us about your time there and what it was like to have employees from that culture.
First of all, the time there, I mean, it's amazing how quickly everything's evolving in China. I've now been in Vancouver for 2 years, and I still go back to China on a fairly regular basis. But, you know, when you're gone for 6 months, you look around and there's a whole new set of high rises. Changes so quickly. It's so fast moving and progressive and go, go, go. But back to the question of having employees, even that situation has changed. The having employees in particular in Shanghai, Beijing, Shenzhen, there's a lot of movement in the marketplace. Taochoi is what's called, which is job hopping. It's a very famous phrase used in China, all about how, you know, people hop from job to job. So there's employee engagement issues. And there's also, you know, expectations. Employees are demanding a much higher wages in China than they were even a few years ago, which has a ripple effect when you look at manufacturing in China. Manufacturing in China, to manufacture in China is almost on par with manufacturing in the U.S. now, because the economic situation has changed in China. It's evolved.
It's fascinating, isn't it? But companies are, well, I guess some companies have taken manufacturing out, but most spent so much money invested into China that they're staying there, aren't they?
Yeah, I think the ones that have really invested heavily and actually built factories and built infrastructure out there would be staying. I think people that were just outsourcing to China are either going to move that manufacturing back to the U.S. or perhaps look at alternative markets, possibly Vietnam, Sri Lanka, places where it is more competitive. But in mainland China, it's becoming on par to produce goods because the salaries just keep rising.
How does that relate to managing staff over there, managing people?
There's a very different structure in managing people. I mean, China's, in the United States, you have a society that's quite individualistic. In China, you have much more of a collective society. So the general focus in organizations is on the company as a collective, whereas in our organizations, I think a lot of people rise above and do their own things as long as it's part of the general business structure. So management is very different over there. It was only up until a few years ago that people wouldn't answer the phone in government departments by their names. In fact, they still don't. They very often answer by saying, I am, in literal translation, I am the Ministry of Finance, or I am the government bureau that you're calling. So it's a different mindset. And definitely the structure of power distance is such that the boss, or the laoban, if you will, which is the Chinese word for boss, is a very powerful position, and very few people will challenge or even give advice. All the commands are sort of pushed down through the workforce. So it's quite different.
That would take a while to get used to then for a typical Westerner, wouldn't it?
It does, and as I mentioned, I've spent many years there, and there's an old saying in Chinese, which is zhong go tong. And what that means in Chinese is an old China hand or a China hand. And, you know, as I said, I've spent a number of years there. I'm married to a Chinese lady. I have a Chinese family. But I don't believe, you know, because I was brought up in the Western world, I think you can understand it more, but I don't think you'll ever fully understand it. It's just a completely different way of thinking in a lot of ways. And you can adapt to it, but it does take time. And some people can handle it, and other people don't stay in China very long that are expats. They go back home.
So let's shift gears for a second. Let's just talk about yourself. So you grew up as a Canadian and then went to Hong Kong?
No. I grew up as a Canadian, booked a 2-week ticket to go to Dublin, Ireland in the mid-90s. And you talk about chance, you know, and had I have turned right, I would have kept walking and gone back to Vancouver 2 weeks later. I turned left, the first pub I walked into, the guy says, what do you do for a living? I said, I'm a chef. He said, my chef left yesterday. I need someone to fill a position. I wound up working there, moved on to London, did an MBA, met some classmates that were Chinese, and decided to go over to China. So it's kind of a roundabout way of getting there.
That's a fascinating turn. Wow. So when you were in China, you met your wife?
Yes, we were working together on a project, and she got promoted to Hong Kong, and I guess I'm a bit of a hopeless romantic, but when she told me she was getting promoted to Hong Kong, I said, I'm going to follow you. So I packed my bag and went to Hong Kong and set up a training company in Hong Kong, and the rest is history.
So we've been talking about Westerners going into China, right? That's what we've been talking about. And let's flip it. Now that the Chinese companies are getting rich and powerful and very competitive, they're expanding internationally also, right?
They're expanding internationally, definitely, and they're going to experience a lot of the similar situations that the Western companies experienced when they were going into China. Part of my business in China was coaching some of the larger Western firms in how to adapt to the culture of China. And I'm seeing now that companies are coming to North America and they're struggling because their way of doing business is so different that they're having a hard time adapting and acclimatizing to the way we do things in North America. So, but definitely there's a massive shift and there's a change in Chinese mindset that made in China used to be seen as an inferior product, whereas in mainland China now, made in China is not necessarily seen as a bad thing. So the products that they have and are producing in China, they're now doing well in mainland China, but they're also coming out into other places and doing well. And you look at companies like Lenovo. I mean, Lenovo is doing very well in North America. Huawei is beginning to expand. I mean, you're going to see a trend and you're going to see more and more of that. Interestingly enough, that when you watch sporting events now, 5-6 years ago, you did not see Chinese advertising on any of the surrounding perimeter boards. Now, when you watch British football games, soccer games, and when you watch, you know, the Australian tennis recently, there's a lot of Chinese advertising. These companies are becoming more and more powerful, and the spending power of the Chinese that are tuning into these events is becoming more and more. So it's advantageous to do this.
So to what extent are the Chinese companies buying American or Western talent to help them expand to multinational status successfully?
Well, it's funny. In the late 90s and throughout half, I'd say, of the 2000s, there was a lot of expats in senior roles in China. And it eventually shifted to those roles being localized. So there's a lot of localization in those senior roles. Now, I think as China expands and comes out, they're going to need people, Chinese organizations are going to need Western people to advise them on how to market, how to certainly tweak products to adapt to the West. So it's almost a reverse. There was such a rush of companies going over to China to try and get a piece of that market, and now we're going to start to see the reverse, whether it be mergers and acquisitions or whether it be actually brands coming over and setting up in the United States, Canada, and the rest of the Western world.
Now, as we come to a close here, let's focus on Behind the Great Wall of China, the title and theme of your new book coming out this summer. It's about lessons learned. Tell us some lessons learned.
It's been a lot of fun writing because it brings back a lot of memories. And I think, you know, some of the ones that really stand out is when I remember going to Wuhan, which is quite a large city in Hubei province, and I went to meet some government officials. And I'd been doing a lot of business in Shanghai, which is relatively westernized, and you can be forgiven, shall we say, for making cultural mistakes. Where I was a little bit outside of Wuhan, and it was much more traditional in its scope. And I was walking around. I was sharing alcoholic drinks, as you do in these banquets. And I was clinking people's glasses, but I was clinking the glasses with my glass held above their glass. So I was kind of hitting the bottom of my glass against the top. And unbeknownst to me at the time, this was actually an insult. It was me suggesting that I was above them in stature. And how would you know that unless someone had told you that? So, you know, that was a mistake. And until it was explained to me that I was making a mistake, I basically lost that deal. And then I went back saying, I didn't know, and I had an interpreter say that, and I didn't mean to insult you. And everything was forgiven after that. But it's these kind of on-the-ground lessons that I learned. And I'm trying to wrap the book around in a, there's a lot of books on the market about doing business in China, but I think there's a lot less on real life, you know, down and dirty in some of these smaller cities and some of the things that you can do wrong and how to correct it. So that's kind of the focus. Lessons learned so that people going over to establish business in China will have a little bit of a deeper understanding of how to interact. And there's so many subtle differences that can make or break business arrangements. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it being published and getting it into people's arms.
I can't wait to get it myself. Looking forward to learning more from you. Okay, so now, if you could sum up about doing business in Canada today, and Canadians are not Americans, and Canada is certainly not the U.S., however, Canada is the U.S.'s largest business partner, trading partner.
So how do you see that as a Canadian? How do you see the relation, the business relationship with the U.S.?
That's an interesting question, Ed. And I'm going to backtrack a little bit and say, you know, we were just talking about China, and it's very important in China to realize that what works, and as I was mentioning the Wuhan story, what works in Shanghai might not work in Wuhan, might not work in Shenzhen. So you do have regional differences as well. So I find this similar in Canada, that you look at, you know, the sort of the economic engine of Canada is Toronto. And in Toronto, it's a faster moving business culture. It's a little bit more direct. It's a little bit more almost an American style of doing business, if you will, much more direct, much more to the point. I also believe from experience and from what I've read and what I've seen is that Albertans are very similar in that style. Here on the West Coast, it's a little bit slower, the pace of business. And it's very much, again, you know, we talk about Guangxi in China. There's an element of Guangxi here. And that is that, you know, people will very often say, oh, you know, you've got a new product. Oh, who else have you sold that product to? Who do you know? And once you kind of crack that and you've got those people, those common relationships, then you can move forward with business. So I think it's difficult to answer that because it's quite different from region to region. But I think Americans and Canadians have a pretty good understanding of each other. But I would say that an American business culture is much more direct and much more fast moving. So I think Americans need to appreciate that, and Canadians need to appreciate that too.
So are you saying that in Vancouver, in downtown Vancouver, is it like Seattle or like California, or no, it's just Vancouver?
It's a unique place unto itself, and don't get me wrong, it's dynamic. It just, it doesn't maybe move at the same speed that a Toronto or a New York would move, sort of a West Coast flavor to doing business, and you just need to adapt a little bit your style, I think, to the West Coast way of doing business.
Yeah, well, that's for sure, because we see it here in San Diego, now in the southwest corner, and 130 miles to the north is L.A., and it's very different, and way different than New York.
Yeah, and again, backtracking to China, I think people have to realize that when they are looking at opportunities in China, there's a lot more opportunities right now in what we call the Tier 2 and the Tier 3 cities. So these are the cities that are a little bit less developed than Shanghai, Shenzhen, Guangzhou, and Beijing, which are the Tier 1 cities. So it's almost like there's big opportunities in, if I can put this in an American concept, you know, there's big opportunities in Cleveland, possibly Sacramento. You know what I mean? It's more like the smaller cities outside of the big ones where the opportunities are. But you have to adapt your style of doing business to those environments, as doing business in New York is going to be different from doing business in Cleveland. And that's just my take on it.
So let's come full circle now and go back to Guangxi. Tell us again, how would you and I do Guangxi? Or is that a stupid question?
No, it's a great question. You know, well, let me give the example of how Guangxi worked for me. I became, you know, I was fortunate that I got instant Guangxi, because when I did my MBA in Cardiff in the UK, in Wales, I sat in a very large auditorium. It was the largest MBA program in Europe, and it was sort of divided. The classroom was almost divided in one section that was students from India, one section that was students from Chinese, and then a smaller section was the local Welsh group, if you will, that was sitting at the front of the class. And I went and said, I thought, I'm on a global MBA. Why do I want to sit with one group? I want to meet with every group. So I sort of sat in between the Chinese group and became very friendly with some of the guys in that area. And unbeknownst to me, they owned one of the largest advertising companies in Shanghai. So, you know, I did a lot of favors for them, and I didn't know of their power and their wealth and their success in China. So when it came time for me to go over and visit China again, I met with them at their offices and was pleasantly surprised. And then when we decided to work together, I kind of was part of their Guangxi network. So, you know, when I needed stuff done, I could call on them to call on their network to get things done quickly. So if you have that network, you can get things done very quickly and bypass a lot of hurdles and obstacles, in particular in government relations. And that was sort of already built for me. If you're to go over there cold, again, it's hit and miss who you meet and what value you bring to them and what value they bring to you. And you can build it, but it's something that takes time. I always say to people, if you're into China or you want to get into China, you got to have a long-term strategy. And you will reap rewards more than likely in the long term. It can't be a short, I'm going to go in, I'm going to make it, I'm going to get out. It's just the way it works.
We've been talking with Andrew Woods, who's based in Vancouver, British Columbia, in Canada. Andrew wrote a book called Boom, Engaging and Inspiring Employees Across Cultures. His website is adwseminars.com. And Andrew is writing a new book now called Behind the Great Wall of China, Business Lessons and Daily Life Through a Westerner's Eyes. Andrew will also be a featured speaker in our Canada conference in Vancouver on June 4, 2015. Andrew, thanks again for being our guest on Global Radio Talk Show.
Thank you, Ed. I enjoyed it.
This is Ed Cohen, based in Old Town San Diego, signing off.
Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful